right, welcome to a podcast episode of Derek Chase. It's Monday, October 15th, a little bit before 6 o'clock, the live show later on tonight. Tonight's guest is someone you might have heard us during the podcast or during the show talk about a little bit, because the former director of Equality Toledo hangs with us quite often, but this is Annalise Alvarez. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
It's good to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Are you really happy?
I am really happy.
I didn't ruin your night because I know you're super busy with stuff.
No, it's okay. This is a good break. I've been working on my dissertation all day, and I'm super geeky about this kind of stuff, and had thoughts of being in realms of entertainment like radio, and
right.
Now this podcast stuff is so enthralling to me, but I don't have the time, money, or patience to look into it, so I'm geekily excited.
It's pretty cheap to do it. Patience, I mean, it's just talking stuff, but time, yeah, that's the big thing we always... what are you geeky about with, like, just podcasts? You search them out and listen to all different kinds of things?
I listen to a handful. I'm pretty late to the podcast game, so I'm listening to stuff that maybe had been released a decade ago.
Like Serial?
No, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast. I'm
okay.
A huge fan,
okay.
and things like that. But they were recorded a decade ago, 8 years
Got
ago,
it.
9 years ago. So I really like, as creepy as this might be, I like reading about serial killers. So
okay.
There's a few podcasts out there that
yeah.
are old and they're not recording anymore, but I'm listening to them.
Right.
I think I hear them and I just get ideas in my head like, oh, I could do this and I can do that and I can do this. But it comes down to time.
Yeah. And none of us have enough time to do it. Annalise is correct me if I'm wrong, the new director of Equality Toledo.
That is correct.
Executive director?
Executive director since March.
You took over you succeeded the statuesque, the legendary, the heroic Nick Comives, who moved on from the position to do city council stuff
yes.
full time and,
yes.
and drink coffee with people like me. How did you wind up with that slot?
So, you know, I moved here with my wife in 2015.
Okay. Where'd you move from?
We were living in Las Vegas at the time.
Okay.
I'm from California. So
okay.
From California through way of Las Vegas. I moved there for about a decade, and that's where I met my wife, who
okay.
had graduated from Whitmer and basically bailed for college and then went west to teach. And so we ended
okay.
up teaching at the same school in 2006. So we moved here in 2015 for a myriad of reasons, family, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I entered a doctoral program at UT, and as a graduate assistant, stepped out of the classroom and kind of buried my head. In Las Vegas, my wife and I were very involved in and were big activists in the community in a number of different realms. I was also an activist in Southern California when I taught and lived there. But I buried my head.
Buried your head as in just all school all the time?
All school. I had no idea. I hadn't been a traditional student since undergrad, and I graduated undergrad in 2000. So to tell you, it'd been 15 years. My master's was a summers-only program, so it was intensive. 12 weeks in the summer.
What is this dissertation and your master's and all this? What are you going for?
It's a educational doctorate in
okay.
educational administration and supervision. Basically, really fancy way of saying I
principal?
Might be a principal. Yes. I don't know that I want to be. I was a high
okay.
school band director, and I could very much see myself teaching back at the high school level, high school band when I'm done. But I decided if I was going to get a third degree and possibly look at administration, it wasn't going to be another degree in music, and I didn't want a second master's.
What's your dream job?
Dream job?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's a loaded question.
You can give me the unicorn version, and you can also give me the one that like is actually practical.
I think I'd be a pretty outstanding school administrator,
okay.
and I would maybe like to see that for a handful of years, but my work now with Equality Toledo has opened some doors and opened
mm-hmm.
my eyes to what's possible with organizational leadership training
mm-hmm.
and how it can affect communities. So
yeah.
Dream job right now is something that'll allow me to no longer be a poor student, but maybe continue along with some of this activist work. I don't know what that looks like. Dream job, I don't know. I just want to be paid enough to live and hundreds of thousands of dollars of educational knowledge.
Yeah, you're never not going to be a poor student because that debt will hang over you, but you'll have all those degrees.
Well, see, if I have that dream job that helps me pay off that debt quickly, then I'm good.
That's called dream lottery ticket.
Oh, there you go.
Let me ask you this, because this is something that goes through my head, and then we can go back to you buried yourself.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because you did kind of appear out of thin air. Like, I'm well connected with the LGBT community, and then you just pop up and I'm like, who?
Yeah.
And you're sitting next to me at the Dirty Bird. I'm like, oh, you took Nick's job. But so I don't know how much you know about me or whatever, but I worked for iHeartMedia for a long, long time. And then our show got evaporated in June of last year. And I had decided I wanted to stay here because a lot of people had reached out to me and thanked me for what I talked about on the air and you know, mental health advocacy, animal advocacy. And it was important to me to continue to create that change and to activate people to help themselves. And one of the reasons that I wanted to stay here and do that was, well, I've worked in other cities before, back home in Philadelphia, in Detroit, and in a variety of places. Those are such big places where many people in media aspire to go because you can have a broader reach. But it feels like it's so hard to touch people in cities like that. And I bring this up with you because living in Vegas, and we're in California.
I grew up in a town called Santa Barbara, so smaller
than
Toledo.
Town called Santa Barbara.
Like not a lot of people know what it is. Okay, Katy Perry put us on the map. I'll say that. And if you're even older, like, I'm going to forget the actress's name. It doesn't matter.
How about Lost Boys?
Lost
the movie?
Boys. Is that, does that take, I've seen it. It's been a really long time.
I think that's in Santa Barbara.
It's supposed to take place in Santa, that actually is something I never paid attention to.
Wow.
I do know that Sunnydale, like Joss Whedon was intending it to be Santa Barbara, but there's not a lot of attention to I call it a town. It's smaller than Toledo, north of Los Angeles. But I went to USC, and so I lived in Los Angeles.
Huge place, second biggest. Yeah. So I bring it up to you, is like one of the reasons I want to stay here is, well, I could go do this. I wouldn't have the cachet that I would in other places, and I could work back up to it. But it's so hard to touch people like we do or like we aim to in bigger places. And yes, you could potentially fight through and help those people. But here, it's like we can really do it on a real personal basis. And I like that a lot. Like, I can shoot up to Bedford. I can go down to... geographically, it's closer together where, yes, you could still affect a lot of people in Los Angeles or Las Vegas, but I guess the wave is easier to create here. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I look at, to use your example, look at someone like Ryan Seacrest, who when I was an undergrad was a radio guy and doing a lot of really great things, but he had to like explode and use American Idol to create a format and a platform that he can now do other things, but he's all entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not a great example, but I can see how for anyone to know who he really was, he had to become really big.
Yeah.
So I totally get what you're saying.
You have to fight through all those other interests and pieces of entertainment and components that make these big, great cities. Whereas here, you know, and I guess it's not, I know because of what we do, it's not an ego thing, but we like to see the tangibility of it. Like, it's kind of neat when I would get random Facebook messages, or if I'm out somewhere and like, hey, I used to listen to you on the radio and blanking. Like, it's hard to get that in bigger places. And again, it's not an ego thing. It's knowing that you've made an impact in someone's life in a positive way.
Absolutely.
What are the ways that you aim to do that with Equality Toledo?
Well, so I'm still getting a grasp of all the things Equality Toledo has been. Even prior to Nick being the executive director, and where the organization is going now, because there's been a significant shift very purposefully since I took over. So,
what's that shift been?
So the first thing is kind of pulling the organization away from the idea that we're still this little grassroots organization.
Right.
I mean, Nick really put the organization on a bigger map with a lot of the really great work that he did. So now people, as I step in, people are paying attention, the community is paying attention, and then looks to us, the media looks to us.
It's a big brand.
It's huge. Yeah. And so we have to stop functioning like this little grassroots organization. And that is, you know, it's turning some people off, and it's also turning some people on. And what it really comes down to is becoming a grander facilitator for the LGBTQ community. You know, we don't run much programming, and the biggest programming piece we have is our pantry, which we can talk about later. So what we want to do is make sure we're connecting people to the right services and resources that they may need for any particular moment in time. And that's a pretty big piece.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the resources that you advocate most for when people come to you guys for any kind of assistance?
I don't think there's a most. There's just what we know is available. So we were talking about youth. We have our organizations that work with youth. And we're talking about someone who might be in crisis. And we have organizations that help them reach out to if they're in crisis.
Do you want to name drop them?
Some of them, yeah, but I have a feeling they'll come up in other talks later, which is why I'm being a little more general, focusing on Equality Toledo as a focal point, to your question. You know, it just depends on what we're being, approached with. So one of the big things right now for me, it's not big. One of the things I'm facing right now is, I have a few of the senior centers that have reached out and say, hey, we have LGBTQ people that are coming and now needing senior care in the final stages of their life, and they have no idea. They've never been trained on LGBTQ issues. So I'm working with the Office of Aging, and it's not LGBTQ oriented organization, but they need the training. So Equality Toledo is really trying to use visibility as a piece to get out to more of the community. So in terms of who we send people to is really dependent on what they need.
It's like once a week I see you doing a presentation somewhere on Facebook. A large part of the this work that you're talking about?
Yeah, so
educating these groups?
Yeah, and that's a big piece that Nick started. I can't say whether it started before him. I'm still learning about the history of the organization, but corporations are really big about scoring on HRC's corporate equality index. There's the CEI scores. They're really big on showing the new generation of college graduates that they are a welcoming and affirming place to work. And so a lot of our bigger to smaller corporations, businesses here want that training. I just met with someone from the Toledo Chamber of Commerce who spent some money, I believe, to send a whole bunch of people to a training out in, I think, Cincinnati that we offer here for free. So again, here goes that visibility that has nothing to do with the LGBTQ community other than going into these businesses and showing them how they can set up employee resource groups or other groups that can support their LGBTQ employees and make them better places to work.
When you do these presentations, what's give me some of the bullet points of the education process that you go through for some of these people who are probably at different levels of acceptance, inclusion, and diversity in their own lives?
Yeah, you kind of nailed it, because at each presentation, there are people who identify, people who don't, people never have, and people who are frankly afraid to. So
yeah.
There's been some really great eye-opening moments. There's been some really great confrontational moments, and I call them great because I think without the discourse, there can't be change in these companies. So in terms of bullet points, it's a lot of reassurance and going over terminology and saying, hey, you're going to make mistakes. Be ready for the mistakes. Own up to them, and it's okay. Because most level-headed LGBTQ people that want to keep a job aren't going to go ballistic if someone misgenders them or one of those things. But
I said tranny on the air before.
That's not good.
Philip, you know Philip, right?
Philip.
Taylor?
Yes. I haven't met him, but yes, I know him.
So Philip pulled me aside. He's like, that's kind of like a slur. So we went back on the air and I explained exactly what it was. But there you go.
Yeah.
And I am as inclusive as I could possibly be. But it's just the emergence as we move forward, as we kind of bring everyone together, it's a learning process.
It's still constantly evolving.
Do you run into... like, I'm sure people will call you awful things on the internet because that's what it's there for, but they won't do it to your face, I don't think. And in that case, if there's any kind of ignorance, you don't come across much intent, do you, when you do these presentations? Because I always like to go back to the intent of someone. Like, someone can be an ignorant idiot, but the intent might not be there. The intent of malice might not be there.
You know, being a high school teacher for 15 years really helps me navigate that when I'm in with these buildings, because really these employees of these companies are really just older high school students, really, is what it comes down to. So I pride myself on having a pretty even-keeled temperament, and I really do. And then, actually, something someone's mouthing off about something today on the internet. And it's just like, there's nothing I can do about that. Right. If you're not willing to reach out to me in spaces that we're talking person to person, I think we will come along with a lot more understanding. So I tell those, when I give the presentations, I tell them, now's the time to ask insulting questions.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to bother me. I kind of say it in a funny way. I tell them, you know, I marched in the USC marching band in the mid-90s prior to all the rules about how what you can and can't do as a college organization. I'll leave it at that. and I was in a section where there may have been 8 females in about 70 people, and riding in buses with the entire trumpet section, etc. There's very little anyone can really ever ask me that'll insult me.
Right.
So and then just the years of teaching has allowed me to learn how to keep a pretty even keeled poker face. And I really find that I try to get people to that space where they can ask. And I did have a few questions. One of the ones I did in August, the company had given out a rainbow sticker for people to put in their like cubicles or whatnot. And I had a gentleman say, but if I put this up, people are going to think I'm gay. So it's that could very well have been to someone else an insulting question.
Sure.
Because you come up with a, well, is it a problem that they might think you're gay? But, you know, that's, you don't answer with a confrontational retort. It's, from my understanding, you put a rainbow sticker up, it means you are supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not comfortable with that space, look at this other sticker that your company has provided. It has a rainbow on it, but it's not a rainbow.
Right.
So you have to decide, I told him, you have to decide where your level of comfort is. And when that changes and you feel like you can put a rainbow sticker up in your cubicle, then I've done my job. Even if that's in a year from now.
And how did he leave from that?
Smiling. I think he understood, and that's how most of it has to be. I had another gentleman last week who seemed very uncomfortable. It was a transgender based, most of the presentation was around issues with the transgender community, and he was more along the lines of, well, I don't want to lose my job if I do this, this, and this that you're suggesting to us. And luckily, his boss was like, the boss was in the room and said, I can't ever imagine that being the case. And right. That's why they're here presenting. So
people have fantastic imaginations.
Yeah. And it's, there's fear when you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. And so, it's, for me, it's makes no sense to go in there and be confrontational, meeting them with that confrontational. I tell them to give it to me all they want, because that's the best space they can do instead of being out in public and being confrontational with someone who might be confrontational.
Sure, it's probably not in these presentations in these corporate workplaces, but do you ever run into to like real idiocy? I got asked when I was speaking at one of our synagogues in the springtime, somebody said, what do you do when somebody says, it's all in your head and, you know, just walk it off? Like, you don't do that with depression or bipolar. I was like, I ignore those people because they're ignorant and they have no idea and they're usually unwilling to have a conversation. So it's just like, you know, pat them on the head and walk away. What do you do when you get a question like that? Like, I guess maybe it's something tied to religion. Like, God will disavow.
I've definitely dealt with that. Out in Vegas, I was the co-chair of an organization chapter of GLSEN Southern Nevada. I was the co-chair. And we went into groups of teachers and administrators and gave trainings similar to what I'm doing with Equality Toledo,
mm-hmm.
But obviously school-based, and statistics are school-based. So I'd get the, well, my religion says this, or I've had a principal tell us, we don't have gay students on our campus. We don't need this here. And so, again, for me, it's always been be even keeled and okay, if that's what you believe.
Right.
With that principal, it was like, that's what you believe, but I have, and I'm not going to show you, I didn't show him the names of the students. I said, I have 15 emails right here coming from students on your campus who are being thrown into lockers and beat up in the locker room. And they may or may not even be gay. They
might
not be. You're right.
Right.
But you know what? This is happening because of a lack of understanding. To the religion question, I told that particular teacher that brought that up is, you have a choice to make. There are students who already identify as LGBTQ in your classrooms. You're either going to have a welcoming place for them or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And if your religion's going to stand in the way of that, I can't do anything to change that. In public, it's the same thing. You know, I identify as I identify. And you're not going to change that of me, and I'm not going to change you of your beliefs, but we're still sitting at this table here. We're still sitting at this bar here. We're still sharing a meal or sharing a drink. That's what it's really all about, is just treating each other as humans.
And at the school, in a situation like that, like, it's your responsibility as an educator to protect these kids that are in your care for 6 to 8 hours a day. So
at least give them a safe place to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
You had mentioned that you just buried your head in the sand when you got here in 2015. Yes. And then you just kind of appeared out of thin air and became the director of Equality Toledo. Is this true?
It was a little bit more of a process that people don't know about. And so when I moved here and I had to resign from GLSEN in Southern Nevada, they called me right back about 2 days later, maybe less than 2 days later, and said, oh, we've never had a chapter in Northwest Ohio. You should open one. I went, doctorate, I don't know. Let's not go there. So it took a couple of years. And about the time I was taking my comprehensive exams, about a year ago, and ending coursework where I was suddenly not going to have night classes and suddenly going to have what I felt was extra time, my wife and I started looking at volunteering in the community. And I'm actually sometimes surprised that Equality Toledo hired me, because I railed on the community and their organization and the organization itself in my interview. And we had a lot of trouble getting responses from organizations. I will not name which ones here, but there were two specifically that I emailed and said, hey, my wife and I have all this experience. We did all these things in Vegas. We would love to come volunteer for your organization, and got crickets. And so I was getting pretty frustrated. There's not a lot of transparency out there for some of the organizations. And I value my time enough to know that if I'm going to step into an organization and volunteer, that I want to know that they're running things on the up and up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so about the time I was getting ready to kind of just quit and focus on dissertation, I can't even remember who alerted me to the job first, but Equality Toledo popped up just after I had interviewed for the Lucas County Suicide Prevention Coalition. I was one of the finalists for the coordinator position there. And they didn't hire me, which it all works out the way it's supposed to. There's no bitterness there, obviously.
You can tell Jen you hate her. I'll tell Jen.
Oh, no. I told a few of the board members that they totally hired the right person. Jen's doing a great job. And I think just the funny the way the universe is, it all worked out the way it was supposed to. So shortly after I didn't get that job, Equality Toledo posted. And I thought, yeah, I'll just throw my hat in the bag and see what happens. And here I am.
And it's been a good ride so far.
So far, I have very little complaints. There's some things that I would like to see fixed in the community, and I'm going to work to the bone to try to fix them. There's some places for improvement, and there's some things that are going really well. So I'm pretty happy.
We have when Philip's long-distance boyfriend, Danny, visited from London over the summertime. I took him to a show at the Valentine. I forget what the performance was. And I asked Danny, because they had been out the night before at George's and all over Uptown, and he got a good taste of the inclusive part of our whole region. And I was like, so what's your take on our community here? He's like, this is like big city. And having been here now for like 6 years, a testament to Nick and Lexi and Tori and Nicole and so many others, like, of all the things that aren't big city about Toledo, our LGBT and Uptown district is not one of them. Like, it's like a mini, this thing rivals Detroit when Pride weekend comes around, and the parade was bonkers this year. Like, so you're in good hands.
Yeah, so I spent a lot of my 20s up and down the California coast going to prides. Once I came out, I was 20 when I came out. Once I came out, it was just going to all these parties and just being around the community for the first time ever. Realistically, in Los Angeles, I was around the community, but you just aren't aware of it, right?
More organized activities.
Right, so I've been to a ton of prides. I've been to some overseas, and I will say, Toledo Pride is one of the best I've ever been to.
Yeah.
And I felt that way when we first moved here in 2015. We moved at the end of July, and I turned to my wife and I said, well, what's going on in August before I start school? Let's do something. What about Pride? And she's like, there's not a Pride in Toledo. There's never been a Pride in Toledo. She's been gone since, what, 98, 99? Mm-hmm. And so she went online and went, oh, there is a Pride in Toledo.
Look
and,
at
oh,
that.
It's next weekend. Let's go. And she, it was a moment for her, because this is a city she grew up in, and she left because of the lack of inclusiveness. And one of the reasons she left was because of that. But she was just she had moments, and I looked and said, this is great. And now looking at it from the inside, since Equality Toledo works in partnership very, very well with Toledo Pride, this is one of the best ones I've ever been to.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
I didn't go to the parade because I was still recovering from Friday night this year, but looking at the pictures online, on Facebook, everywhere, to be frank, but both, you know, mainstream media and people's, you know, social posts, like, it wasn't a good Pride event. It was a good Toledo event.
Absolutely. I agree.
Like, it's as integral as in the summer as, you know, the German American Festival, the fair, the rib off, all that stuff. It's not a Pride event, it's a Toledo event.
And it certainly has become so in less than a decade, and that's hats off to the Toledo Pride Foundation and Lexi and all the work that they do.
What are some of the things that are like short-term goals and then maybe long-term goals for ET as you move forward?
So I talked about earlier about this shift. So we're shifting, thanks to Nick and the great work that he's doing now as a council member, we can move away from some of the more political pieces. You know, he was big at getting, and this is huge, if people aren't aware of this, that the fact that he at Equality got conversion therapy banned for all ages. I think we're one of the only cities in the country where that's the case.
Good to know.
There's a lot that ban it for minors, but ours is written so it's all ages. It is banned, and that's huge.
In the city?
Yes. And so we have a lot of great pieces that Nick worked on, and now he, at his fingertips, has more flexibility to be able to say, hey, intern, we need this. Can you grab this information for me and kind of type this out? And rather than us going to someone and saying, hey, can you help us with this, and then waiting for the back and forth, mm-hmm. he can do things a lot more immediately, and he and I have a great working relationship that he will reach out to me and say, hey, do you want to be part of this? Can you help with these things? And vice versa. So we are shifting into what's listed on our website, more of our 2020 mission or 2020 vision. So short term for me is I want the nonprofit organizations to have more unity. So for all the great things that Toledo has in terms of the LGBTQ community, I think there's a little bit of discourse in how the organizations work together.
Can I offer some potential insight on that?
Absolutely.
There are a lot of nonprofits.
There's a lot of nonprofits, yes.
And there are the emergence of this city. I saw it over the spring and the summer. There are a lot of great new events and things to do, and they're not all going to make it.
Yes.
The events, things to do, and the nonprofits. Because we have a finite number of people resources and financial resources.
Yes.
So I could see why things get testy between some of them, because they're all fighting for often the same dollar and person,
right,
to exist.
And that is a very valid point. I also think just programming-wise, we can do a lot better.
Because there's a lot of overlap, right?
I don't know even if overlap is the problem. I don't know what the problem is. So as a forward story of how this is progressing, I had an organizational meeting back in June where I had three organizations show up. I'm having another one in a week from today that's going to have, I believe, a representative from every LGBTQ focused nonprofit. So it's really going to be about laying some stuff on the table and figuring out how we can be more unified, because I think we look silly.
Yeah.
I think we look silly as a group of nonprofits that are like my ball, my court. So, and I don't know if that's even the case. Hopefully we'll get to uncover some of this. And I want to have these organizations meet quarterly and then have other groups that are not nonprofits come in and present what they do and how we can help each other.
Yeah.
So hopefully these quarterly organizational meetings are going to be productive and having our nonprofits have a more unified front and maybe don't overlap so much. What you said is exactly what I would tell my students when they were looking to fundraise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at a finite number of days in the school year and a finite number of students who have a finite number of dollars, and everyone's fighting for the dollars in
yep.
their pockets. So we can't fight with other groups to go after that same pot. We have to figure out how to share the pot better to make it better for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a good feeling about meeting with the nonprofits, and we'll see how it goes
good.
Next week.
I look forward to it.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
there's overlap, and then there's a complete incongruity. Like, it's so far off that like they could be working together cohesively to strengthen both of their groups without stepping on one another.
Yes.
But that's what happened. It's like too many cooks in the kitchen kind of deal.
Yes.
And you doing these things quarterly, bringing everybody together, can outline some roles and some boundaries.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of misinformation out there too. You mentioned earlier about just being knocked down on social media. And I don't know that we're being knocked down. We're going to make decisions that don't make people happy. We can't make the entire community happy, but we're going to do everything we can to make the community better and safe and whatnot. But I think I'm kind of losing my train of thought. I'm sorry. I think there's just a lot of misinformation and people making assumptions on things they see or things they hear. Mm-hmm. Well, I heard this and I heard this. So I'm really hoping these meetings kind of clear a lot of that up.
Good.
And
'cause they're all good things. I mean, you're going to have your bad eggs, your bad apples every now and then. But we're all nonprofits. We're trying to do things here for the right reasons. Like, this is not corporate America. And I know sometimes it can get it and politics and get its claws into nonprofit.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we're trying to help people out. So, like, let's retract the claws.
Yes, absolutely. So that's one of my short-term goals that I brought to Equality Toledo. I think... because of the visibility that we're getting, we are in a unique position to try to support all of the other nonprofits. I mean, we ran a drag bingo pride kickoff event with Lexi's and Toledo Pride's blessing the Tuesday before Pride opened, in which we donated all the profits to nonprofits that came and helped and volunteered for it. So I think more of that is what we're looking for, and more camaraderie is helpful. Other short-term things is Equality Toledo is trying to run some more events, maybe not programming, but some events. So we did our Pride Week, and I kind of stole that idea from the bigger cities. You know, you go to Los Angeles and they have a Pride Week that leads up to stuff, and San Francisco Pride Week, and there's a family picnic.
It's Pride Year. Yeah. Pride Lifestyle.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
Vegas does a really good job with their Pride. Their Pride is actually this week, so they'll have like drag bingo one night, and they'll have family picnics, and they'll have so on and so forth every night leading up to the Pride, and that really helps support the entire community, where you don't have, where you have people that maybe don't want to go to the bars and maybe don't want to go to the clubs and maybe don't want to stand in the parade and watch a parade, and that's really what we intended. So we're trying to put some events out there that bring out more of the grander community that maybe see a mixer at a bar and go, well, I'm recovering and I really don't want to go to a bar.
Whereas you mentioned it earlier, seniors who are probably still feel excluded in some ways with some people of their age, maybe something senior-centric for the LGBT community.
So we're definitely looking at supporting those kind of things in the short term.
Great idea. I love the week idea. I love stealing stuff from other places where it's successful.
Yeah, I'm grateful it's successful. We did a tie-dye event. We had almost 200 people there, and we had to shut down an hour and a half early because we ran out of materials.
Is that Collingwood?
That was at Collingwood. It was outside the art center, just in the grass area.
Tori and Lexi said they had some food trucks out there and all that thing, right?
We didn't have food trucks. We had some snacks and whatnot. It wasn't as big, but I was really surprised. I thought we were going to be there and some people would come out, show up and tie-dye some shirts. We had almost 200 people come in. And for a first time, really not advertising it other than through social media, to have that many people show up and tie-dye shirts. And then we saw tie-dye shirts all over Pride. So, I mean, that was really cool. So the Pride Week went really well. And I really think working on expanding to the entire community, even our allies, because our allies are just as important. I think a lot of LGBTQ events maybe alienate the allies a little bit, which is what I love about our Love Fest. The Love Fest that we hold in July at the Love Wall, there's a lot more, I think, non-LGBTQ people that attend that than LGBTQ people.
Yeah.
And that's a huge piece. That's a huge piece. And I had just done a presentation at UT with a group there and told them about it. And I had kids come up going, yeah, we probably would have never gone to anything, but we hear about this. And I kind of use the joke, like, if you don't think you're going to go into a gay bar to see drag queens, come see the drag queens and it'll make you want to go.
Right,
we have such great drag queens here in Toledo. People don't realize this.
Yeah.
And again, this is coming from someone who's been to a lot of places and a lot of prides and a lot of presentations. Like, we have some really great queens here.
Floyd,
so shout out to them.
You know Floyd?
Yeah, Floyd's on our board.
Floyd's like, I'm thinking about hanging it up. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're great at this. You go all over the region. Stop. And I know he said he just wanted to pursue some other things.
Sure.
Maybe do some of this. So I got it. But I'm like, you're incredible. You have to keep doing this. And, you know, it's funny. Maybe we'll connect in 10 years and we'll be like, God, I can't believe 30,000 people came to Love Fest.
Right?
Because you're right. And I know it's only 2 years old, right?
Three.
It's 30 Is it 3 years old?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't go to the first year, but I know Philip was hosting 2 years ago, and we came out and came out this year. And it's like, yes, it's like a nice pre-Pride Week event, but I'm curious to see it grow and grow, because everything in Uptown it's got such an energy. And it's got an unlimited ceiling.
Yeah, I think our hope is to do a little bit of cutting off atoms, making it so big that we have to cut off atoms like we did for the Pride, the post party at Georgie's. After Pride, post Pride.
Yeah.
To have to cut off atoms and have quite a few thousand people there.
Mm-hmm.
That's our goal.
What's a big long term goal you have your eye on?
Big long term one, and this is going to, it has already raked a little bit in the community, and people maybe not understanding where we are in the process. So we're working on being more transparent with that. But Toledo needs an LGBTQ center. Toledo needs an equality center. It needs that central focused location that has big enough space that will allow for giant things and small meetings and grand ideas that we have. I was in Vegas when they went from a little room to an entire building to themselves. So we helped with volunteering through that process, and just have a ton of ideas on how to create this grand center somewhere in the city. And so I know we're looking into the history. We know that it's been attempted in the past. So we're trying to learn from past mistakes on why it didn't come to fruition. We know there are some great organizations that run facilities now. We know, Toledo Pride has the Pride Center, which is a beautiful space they offer for free, but it's also limited in size.
Mm-hmm.
We know Harvey House and Promise House both have locations and are trying to serve programming out of those locations. And there may be a few more that are opening or in the process of opening. Again, space limited.
But you're thinking like JCC, I'm thinking, YMCA type building.
Yes, I'm thinking my goals, and please, board members that end up listening to this, don't get mad. I'm going to share them. I see having giant convertible ballroom space where at any given time you can have NA and AA meeting, and you can have a talk group for the aging community, and you have a Girl Scout group. We had a Girl Scout group that wasn't LGBTQ affiliated, but used the Gay and Lesbian Center of Las Vegas just because of its central location.
Yeah.
A cafe and a library and computers that are available for people to come in and apply for jobs, and have one of the organizations come in and do, resume training and who knows, job application help and whatever we could help the community with. I would love to see a youth center in there so that those groups can come in and do programming in for free. I would love to see some sort of medical space where maybe we're offering mental health and HIV testing through partnerships with other groups. Obviously, office spaces and a central location for Equality Toledo and other organizations to run out of. I would love to see offices for all of these nonprofits exist in this one building where they don't have to pay for it, right? Because we've done our job to open and facilitate this building.
Do you have your eye on any place?
No, we are not anywhere near that point. So I know the community met with Nick a few times right in the transition as I was being interviewed and hired. And a lot of people came out to talk about the community center. And then to the grander community, it seems like we've kind of disappeared. But we have since learned that there are some data pieces that have to happen before we even look at a space.
Such as what?
So we are in the final stages of contracting a community assessment survey, which is really going to tell us what the community wants.
Okay.
And so when people get this survey, it's going to give us some data on what Toledo wants and even the greater Toledo area out of a center and whether or not they even want one.
Right.
And so we may get the answer that they don't want one.
And scale as well?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Programming scale will let them give us their opinions on all of that. And once we get the data from that work, then it becomes a feasibility study. Do we have enough financial interest from our bigger corporations and our bigger businesses and people who have a little bit more of the wealth? Are they willing, able, and interested in making this feasible for us financially.
So that it doesn't wind up as being a levy that people potentially vote down or something like that, right?
We don't want to necessarily use government money. I mean, we'll go after grants. We'll go after whatever we need. But the feasibility study is really going to tell us whether or not we have that financial support for what the community wants. And once we have those two pieces, then we'll launch a capital campaign. And that's when we'll be looking at space, location, and how much we need to fundraise to actually open the center. So
maybe we can raise the money to buy those people out of the people who bought Brett's.
I don't know about all that, but hopefully we'll have a bigger centralized location where we can I don't even know the proper way to say this. A centralized location in which we can be made aware of things before they happen and maybe try to mobilize against them a little more efficiently.
There's certainly plenty of empty buildings downtown. I just fear that the cost will be skyrocketing quickly. But whatever, this for this to work out right for everyone, for you guys and for the community and the community at large, not that just the LGBT community.
Correct.
As you're going through these ideas, I hear you talking about like a place like a library.
Yes.
Like, I don't have to go to the library just to read a book. I can go get coffee. I can hop online. There's lots of programming that they have. This could be anything. It could also be a revenue center. Like, I'm looking for a ballroom for like 200 people.
Yes.
What about the Pride Center?
And that's the thing. Like, for sure, our LGBTQ organizations would have a space in which they know they're not going to be upcharged or cheated or treated improperly, but also ally organizations that just want to use the space because of the location it's in or because it's shiny and new. I mean, who knows? We're as big as supporting our allies as we are supporting our community. We can't exist without each other.
No. We're all here together. Yeah. We all live here. We all work here sometimes.
And let me clarify with library. Like our Toledo library system here is also pretty fantastic and up there with some of the big cities that I've lived in. So they do a great job, and we don't want to take away from them. I really just mean like a community library where people can leave books, take a book. You know?
Oh yeah, I was just using that as an example. It's like because they've been running a great campaign. Do you know Jason at the library? Jason's last name escapes me right now.
It's possible.
Anyway, they have been running a brilliant campaign, a lot of radio ads, with a stodgy old guy saying, "You can't do that here. You just come here to get books." And it's like, I'm going to a yoga class. I'm going to use it. So I love that.
Yes.
It's such a great paradigm shift for the library to modernize itself. And for me, we can't have enough buildings like that are multi-purpose for a variety of things.
Yes.
And when you were running down things, I'm thinking, put a gymnasium in there or just.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's do some 3-on-3 tournaments. Come on.
Everything.
I'm all for it. Like racquetball tournaments. Like, it just, to me, the sky's the limit, right? Mm-hmm. And there are a few buildings that I'll drive by and look at, like, that would be perfect. I'll give you an example of one. There's a church on the corner of, I think it's Collingwood and Bancroft.
Okay.
16,000 square feet. It would be a beautiful location.
Isn't that church used?
No, it's empty.
Okay.
It's completely empty. What the name of it is.
I know that's where some of our historical churches are, but there's a lot in that area. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
But like a building, 16,000 square feet, right there in the heart of the Old West End or at the edge of Old West End. I'm not 100% sure on the geographic locations of Toledo still, but just a big building in a big space. But our survey and our assessments and the work that we're doing behind the scenes right now might show us that that's too big.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I still think, I use the term convertible ballroom space where one day it's hosting I'd love to see Harvey Household gay prom there. And they don't have to pay for anything.
Right.
Right? So host gay prom there one night, and then the next morning there's 5 meetings going on in that same space. So I think it's nothing but good that can happen with the work we're doing for the
It's a great vision. I hope it works out. I just thought of another idea.
What's that?
Pride dodgeball tournament.
We'll talk to Lexi about that one.
I will.
Whew.
I will. I, other
Someone's
ideas.
Someone's got to pay for the liability on that
I
one.
I know. Personally speaking, when you have a second or two of free time, which is probably very literal and not figurative, what do you do?
I like to read.
What do you like to read?
I'm a big Stephen King fan.
Okay.
And people are going to go crazy about this. I have never watched, read, or known very much about the Harry Potter series, and I'm on book 2 now.
Okay. How old are you?
How old am I? I'm 40.
Okay. I'm 39. I think we're a little old for having to have read Harry Potter, because I haven't read or watched any of the movies either.
No, but we were in our 20s when it was released. So yeah. We were at that age where I was almost towards the end of college and focusing on getting into career. But definitely by the time I started teaching, I had high school students that were all over it.
Yeah.
So between that and like the Twilight series were the two times in 15 years of teaching that I had students raise their hands and go, you know, Miss Alvarez, can I read when I'm done with my test? And I'm like, head explosion, right? Like
we something happened. Like we missed it. People that are about 5 to 10 years younger than us, and even now, like they got all these cool fantasy movies that came out that were stemming from books.
Yes,
and we're reading The Scarlet Letter and The Great Gatsby.
And how big comic books and comic book movies are now. It blows my mind. We nerds really grew up in a non-nerdy time, and it's so exciting to see it all still happen. And so, yeah, Harry Potter. But I read as much as possible, and it's really good for me to break away from the academic reading a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I need to. I'm a musician. I've played the trumpet since I was 10. So being at UT, I've sat in with their groups a couple of times. I've had a few gigs around town, nothing fancy, you know, playing for churches or whatever. Anytime I can pick up my trumpet and play a little bit, or pick up my guitar and play a little bit, it's a good mind relax. I really enjoy being here in Toledo for the weather. And that's going to sound really funny because no, the winter is still a thing. I keep being told that these have been mild winters since 2015. I don't care if you've never owned a coat.
Yeah.
And everything you know about driving is opposite of what you need to do. Any snow is impossible.
When did you get here in 2015?
In August. Okay. So we missed that really bad year, apparently.
It was awful. It was Armageddon.
That's what, like, kids were out of school for a month. Because, you know, my in-laws are all here, so we heard all about it. So I was prepared for just awfulness, and apparently it hasn't been that awful.
Nope.
It's awful for me. However, what I mean by weather is I lived in Vegas for a decade, so you don't ever go to an in-between. It's really cold in the winter, really cold for Vegas. It's really cold in the winter, and then it just starts heating up, and by May you're in the hundreds. So having grown up by the beach in Santa Barbara, where it's 78 degrees every day, and we're
so nice
barbecuing on the beach on Christmas Day and jumping in the water, a little cold, but whatever, the Pacific's cold. I grew up where there were no seasons. I grew up where there wasn't weather issues. So living in Vegas, where I couldn't be outdoors very, very much, like, killed me every summer.
Right.
So I've taken advantage of the University Park Trails, and I love their expansion.
Great park system here.
Oh my gosh, yes. And the fall weather and the spring weather are gorgeous. So and that kind of fueled that podcast thing we were talking about earlier. I started starting to listen to podcasts and walking 3 or 4 miles a day because the weather allows for it to happen. So that's one thing I did. Like, if I have a spare second, it's like, you know, I'm going a little stir crazy, let me jump on my bike, let me go drive over to the trail. I park it over at the McCord little parking lot and take the, you know, you walk there and back. It's 2 miles, you know.
What else do you like here?
Let me
ask you this.
Yeah.
I like to say, when we talk about Toledo, we got the museum, we got the zoo. I think our Mexican restaurants are really good, but you tell me.
It took some time to find some things that I was really happy with, I'm not going to lie. And it's not that the places I was going were bad. They just weren't to my personal standard.
Right.
But I will say, I'm going to give a shout out to 419 Tacos because...
New place, right?
New place right on Holland, Sylvania. It's down the street from where I live. And for me, it's the most authentic Mexican food that I've ever had in Toledo. And partially that's because, you know, just like any other country, Mexico has its regions. So it depends on where you grew up. So Southern California is a very specific type of Mexican food. And 419 Tacos is really the closest to home cooking that I've had here.
Let me run a couple places by you.
Okay.
And there's no sponsors here, and you're diplomatic, so you're not going to slam anybody too hard.
Oh, of course not.
I'll run them by you, and you give me the first word that comes to mind.
Okay. Now, you'll have to remember there's some places I just haven't been.
Fair enough. El Vaquero.
I've been there once. It was okay.
El Camino.
Same thing. Been there once. It was okay.
Cocina de Carlos.
I have not been there yet.
Poco Loco.
Poco Loco's great. I love Poco Loco. In fact, until 419 Tacos opened, that was the place that I would have given a shout out to. They're really great. I actually just had lunch there the other day.
Carlos is doing a fast casual place.
Yes, and it's got Cuban.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it might be a competitor for 419 Tacos.
That's okay. Competition's okay.
Who else do I? El Tipico.
Never been.
You gotta go.
I'll try it.
On South or Western Avenue, right off the trail, kind of in a shady neighborhood, but really good.
I think we went once and they were closing. It was a holiday of some sort, so they were closing early on a like a Friday night, but we missed it. So.
Last place, I don't know the name of it, but I know it's across from the Sofio Quintero Center. Have you been there?
I've not been to the center. Are you talking about San Marcos?
No, not San Marcos. Okay. San Marcos is on the mouth of the bridge.
Oh, okay.
I actually have to go there afterwards because somebody said, I wish they had Soul here. I'm like, I can get you Soul. They have Soul at San...
My heart was happy the first time I walked into that San Marcos and there's the little taqueria, going into the restaurant, because I was like, okay, now I know where I can get some pan dulce. Now I know where I can get, you know, when I need some... specific stuff, I can go there, and I have ever since. The little market is great.
Down Broadway, across from the Sofio Quintero Arts Center, there's, I think it's called Mama's. It's a place that people rave about, but I've never been. And another one of those places, I think like El Tipico, that doesn't serve alcohol, but the food is delicious.
Huh. So. I'll look it up.
Well, give me one more thing. We'll wrap up. Give me another thing you like about living here, or give me a comparison, a juxtaposition between LA and here.
Traffic, right?
Probably.
Traffic's nothing here.
Yeah, exactly.
I see people complain about traffic, and I just laugh. I think, and I know this wasn't the case. I know Toledo's still in a big growth movement, but I'm very pleasantly surprised about how great Toledo actually is, and I mean that in a lot of ways. Coming from California and very liberal spaces, I was worried about what I knew the stigma of living as LGBTQ in Ohio. Come to find out that Toledo is one of the most welcoming cities in the state.
Toledo's good.
Yes.
The surrounding area is not as inclusive.
And that's okay. You don't know that until you're here, right? You really don't know that. And especially, we talk about Toledo hitting MEI 100 for the first time. We scored 103 and they cap it off at 100.
Can you give me the Twitter version of that? Because I know it was a big deal last week at the Love Wall.
So HRC has a ratings. They check municipalities and laws and protections and give points based on what the city offers. And when I moved here, the score was 58. And that's not a good thing.
No.
That doesn't sound very welcoming to someone who grew up in cities of all hundreds, right? And so we had enough points plus bonus points this year with all the work, again, that Nick had done and that has been happening with the city the last few years, and supported by the mayor's office, etc. I'm not good at Twitter, by the way. You gave me the Twitter
totally
version.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. We scored 103, and of course they cap out at 100 because they're not going to have all these different scales. So you hit 100, you hit that perfect score, and it was a big deal. And even coming from the outside view, I looked it up and said, it's 58. Why are we moving to Toledo?
Right.
You know,
family.
My wife's family's here. So hitting 100 was huge. But
in such a short period of time as well.
Yeah, we did a lot of great work. And one of the big pieces is that health coverage for transgender city employees and their families. That garnered us a whole lot of points. We were at 89 a year ago. So we were closer a year ago than we were when I first moved here. But that piece getting taken care of in the last year at the city level really helped bump us over. And then Nick found some great places where we weren't getting credit and points. So we had to submit some documentation to get some credit and points where they were already due. So that's really how it all happened. But when I say in a lot of ways, I mean the Mud Hens, what a fantastic stadium, and beautiful springs, again versus Vegas. To be able to sit there in a game is a really good night.
When they arrive in June,
when
spring weather.
Oh yeah, I don't care. Whenever it arrives. Again, it's been mild winter, so you know, an August game is still not so bad.
I'm going to bother you so much in February when we're getting just absolutely utterly pounded.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be collecting data in January and February, so I will be in California.
Okay.
Hopefully, a lot of those months. We'll see. But you know, Mud Hens, and we have the Walleye, and you know, UT. The Glass Bowl is beautiful. The first time I walked in the Glass Bowl, I work with a UT marching band as well. I walked in for rehearsal and went, this is not at all. I expected, you know, metal bleachers in this little beautiful, beautiful stadium right there in the middle of campus. The zoo is phenomenal. The museum, art museum is just phenomenal, and it's free.
The first thing I noted when I really started to ingratiate myself here was I was telling family members back home, I said, if I like dropped you in the middle of the art museum and you didn't know where you were,
you would know. Yeah.
You would think that you were in one of the greatest cities on earth.
Yes, or the only clue would be if you dropped them in the glass pavilion, which I'm now itching. Yes. I asked for Christmas for a glass blowing class.
So many to do.
Oh my gosh, it's just phenomenal. There's just so much here that you don't expect.
Yeah, I say like every Friday on the show, like there's no, like we're done with the excuses or nothing to do in Toledo. No, you can't say that anymore.
Right.
There's like I mentioned earlier, there's all, at times too much to do.
Yeah.
And not all of it will last. So take advantage of it now because we have a great place.
And there's a ton of free. That's what gets me. Like being a poor grad student here hasn't been so bad because once we started looking at those spaces, we realized like, oh, we could just go to this park and hang out for a bit and it's gorgeous weather. Let's go do it. So, I mean, you know, there's just so much to do here that it's honestly surprising.
And so much free shoveling for you to do over the winter time.
I got paid to shovel last winter, so.
I hate it. I people would say when I first moved out to the Midwest from the Philadelphia, they're like, doesn't it snow like this there? I'm like, no, like 4 inches shuts the city down. And there really is a big difference. Like when your low of lows in the dead of winter is like 28 and here it's like 18, but the wind chills knocks it down the single digit. No, it's a big difference.
Yeah. And I, for the first little bit, I was geeky about shovel. Like, I'll go out and shovel. Yeah, let's do it. I'd never done it before.
Right.
So now I get it. Like, you know, when things start to freeze in your face and it hurts and
can't feel anything.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of not fun with that. But I mean, you got to experience life. That's my whole thing. Like, we're here. I might as well embrace it. I joke about it a lot, but, you know, I really did buy my first coat ever. In August of that year because I knew they would be on sale versus waiting until it was winter.
Buy a shovel now or buy it at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But
there's a really great BuzzFeed video where they give Southern Californians things that are used in winter. If you've never seen it, Google it.
Gloves.
Really, honestly. I mean, it's things like, you know, ice melt and stuff. There are things that you never see. Like snow chains. You never see growing up in Southern California.
Right.
And so watch it. You'll get... It's really, honestly, pretty much me to a T, their answers. And it sounds so ridiculous, but I mean, I'll give you an example. One of them is the salt for the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guy's answers is something along the lines of like, well, I know you put this on the ground and then shovel it because I saw that in Home Alone. Right? And that is an actual phrase that I told my wife once. Like, well, I know you put like something on the ground and you shovel it like the guy in Home Alone, old that guy does in Home Alone, right? And so we were watching this. She looks at me, she goes, you weren't messing around with me, were you? I said, no, these were really honest questions. You thought I was being a jerk, but no. I mean, if you don't grow up around this stuff, you don't know.
I would have expected like a margarita comment. Like, you just put it around the glass, right? That's just worth it.
There might be that comment. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, find that video. It's well worth the watch.
Last question.
Okay.
Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I'll come and talk about myself anytime you want.
I'd love to have you do that. It was good to have this chat as opposed to you and I sitting next to one another at one of our meetings.
Yes. Assuming I can make a meeting, of course.
Yeah, exactly. You are a busy woman. Thank you again.
No problem. Thanks for
having me. This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content. Which we highly encourage you to hashtag subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.